You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ermil. We've got a special show for you tonight. Obviously, the NBA is getting ready, making preparations to resume the season. And who better to talk about it than perhaps the grandfather of the idea to relaunch the season in Disney World, at least the person who should be getting all the attention, and deservedly so, for starting the season in Disney World, none other than Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports. Keith is a good friend of mine. We used to cover games together in Orlando, and I have not seen him in a few months, obviously, but always good a chance to talk to him, especially now with basketball just on the horizon. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. It feels like forever since we've been at a Magic game. Like I was telling a friend the other day, it feels like I haven't been made that drive down to Amway in, you know, feels like years, even though it's only been, you know, a few months. But yeah, it sounds like we're getting ready. And if, you know, if I'm going to be attending any games, I'll be driving the other direction, which would be really kind of interesting here.
Yeah, I mean, so much has happened in the last few months, not just in terms of the coronavirus in the NBA season, but in the world in general. And it just seems like every day is packed with a 72 hours worth of activity taking place. And I'm at a point where I'd kind of just want to shut down a little bit. I know that's not realistic, but I'm tired and I'm ready to just kind of get back into basketball a little bit. But, you know, you wrote a piece that kind of brought attention to it. I think maybe I had thought about the idea of it taking place in Orlando, but you actually put it at, you know, metaphorical pen to paper and wrote about the idea of the Disney World bubble and hosting the NBA. And to me, it just seemed like it made a lot of sense. As I've told my listeners a number of times, I've covered the Junior NBA Global Championship there. I know what it kind of entails as far as being able to drive into this exclusive location. You're away from pretty much almost everything, and to be able to go there, and they have the proper facilities in place there. But what was your rationale behind it? Did you really think that this was something that was realistic, or were you just kind of putting a thought out there and hoping that maybe somebody might notice?
Yeah, it's funny. So I'll answer kind of the second part there first. The realistic part of me, I was like, well, it's realistic because I know it'll work. But did I ever think it would happen? No, not at all. I didn't think there was any chance. But kind of how we got to it was I was sitting there like everybody else and was initially, all right, we're going to shut the NBA down for a couple weeks and then we'll all be back at it. And then once it became clear, nope, this is going to be a while, we started to hear things like, you know, towards the end of March of, you know, oh, maybe they should play games on cruise ships and things like that, which made no sense to me. And then people were like, oh, you know, a private island and you'll build basketball facilities. And I was like, we're going to go build arenas on a private island. Like none of those things made sense. Then people started saying, well, what about Las Vegas or this or that? And, you know, having been to Las Vegas, you know, several years running for Summer League, it's a great venue for that. But I was like, but it's a real city. Like people are in and out of there and, you know, they're all public right of ways. And how are you going to shut things down? And the hotels are close to where they would play the basketball, but it's not right on top of it like it is at Disney. And the more I started thinking about it, I said, you know, Disney's got all these empty hotel rooms. They've got all these, you know, great basketball facilities with three arenas where you can really set up and build it out at the Wide World of Sports complex. And most importantly, it's private property and they can really shut that place down and do whatever it is they need to do to say, no, if you're, you know, not involved there. And like, you've been there, like it's a pretty good drive off the main road down into the sports complex. It's about a quarter of a mile of a drive down in. Like you would never know when you're at the ESPN Wide World Sports Complex that there are theme parks, you know, fairly close by.
Like, you can't see anything.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. You're there. And I try to explain to people, you know, the sports complex alone is 200 acres, you know, in size. Like, it's massive. Yeah. We've been there for soccer tournaments for my daughter and they've had, you know, 50, you know, to 100 fields set up in their back fields. The box had training camp there for a while. So this is just a massive venue and the three arenas are all, you know, good size, big arenas where they can, you know, set up a lot of things and, you know, really give the NBA everything they could need. And that's putting it all together. That was really where I said, you know, this makes sense to me. I ran it by my editor at Yahoo, who is fortunately knows the Disney property quite well himself. And he's like, yeah, write it up and let's, you know, we'll see where it goes. And lo and behold, this thing, you know, kind of took off like wildfire.
Yeah. It seems like you've been everywhere talking about this idea. It's been a couple of months now, right? Since the piece actually came out.
Yeah. It came out on April 16th. So almost 2 months.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, and just for a little background, I should have mentioned this at first. How long did you work for the Disney Corporation?
Almost 20 years as a, you know, intern. I started as an intern there when I was in college and then went home and finished up school and then came back to work for Disney full time. And I was there all total almost 20 years.
So we're getting more and more news almost every day about what's going on with the proposed plan and everything else. And I'm curious because obviously with your intimate knowledge of the facilities and everything else, do you have any kind of specific concerns about hosting the tournament there or what the rest of the regular season in Disney World?
Yeah, I mean, I have concerns about just the bubble idea in general. If the players aren't going to be serious about it, I don't think this works. I think, unfortunately, if they're out and about in the area, you're going to get a case of, you know, COVID in there. And then does that turn into multiple cases? What does that mean? And those things, that does, you know, kind of worry me. Not kind of, it worries me quite a bit, actually, of, you know, is that going to be a thing? Now, if they can get the players to understand and be on board with, hey, we really need you to stick in this area and not, you know, try to go out and those kind of things, then maybe you can, you know, do this and keep that out. Beyond that, as far as the Disney side goes, I have no issues with the Disney side. Disney will do this. I mean, Disney, I know it's a lot of people coming to town, you know, somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people are going to be coming in for this, for the NBA. That's all the NBA personnel and then maybe families later and then referees, everybody you need to do this. So, but that's, you know, that's a drop in the bucket for what Disney hosts. You know, that's nothing. You know, a slow day at the Magic Kingdom is 30 to 40,000 guests. So they're going to be able to pull that off as far as, you know, hosting this as an event and putting it all together. I do, you know, have some worry that the players are going to be, hey, wait a minute. This isn't all the Four Seasons and high end hotels and those kind of things. The Disney resorts are all really nice, but they're not what NBA players stay in when they're on the road and away from home. That's just, you know, being real. Realistic about it. So that part we'll see, you know, that's going to be, you're curious to see how they take that. But I think a lot of this comes, if you come with the mindset of, hey, we're here to do a job. We're here to finish the season and try and win a championship. I think it'll be just fine because you'll let Disney do what they do and let the NBA do what they do. And, you know, it should go off, you know, relatively without a hitch.
I never thought that the players' reluctance to stay in that facility would be the issue. Like I thought it was more about the you know, overarching concerns regarding the health of, you know, family members, coaches, staff, players, et cetera, you know, not just housing and things of that sort, but that they could be frustrated with being quote unquote trapped in a Disney World environment for a couple of months. It's not like the players have to stay there once they're eliminated. I mean, you know, teams are going to be knocked out within the first few weeks after the first eight games are played out. And then, you know, obviously if there's no play-in tournament to get into the eighth seed in the Western Conference, I don't see any kind of issue. But I'm surprised at how much blowback we've been hearing from players that they resent this whole idea.
Yeah, I'm with you too. And I get it when it initially sounded like, hey, you'll be in lockdown. You'll be in your rooms. You'll be escorted to the bus and to the facility. Cause that's nonsense. I mean, come on. We're not going to, you know, they're not prisoners, as Michelle Roberts said. I think she said this isn't going to be prison. And, you know, so I get that part of it, but you know, if it's, you know, sorry, you're going to hang out in a, you know, pretty nice hotel room that, you know, let's face it, a lot of people, including maybe you and I, couldn't afford to go and stay in for more than a night or two. You know, and it was funny because I was talking with a team and they said, yeah, we've already got our equipment guys. One of the major items on the checklist is the PlayStations and the Xboxes and the DVD, you know, all those things for the players to have to keep them entertained while they're there. And, you know, Disney's going to do stuff to make it fun, especially when the families, you know, get involved. I've even heard, you know, Disney saying, you know, one of the things we could do is bring some of the, you know, new release movies that weren't able to come out in the, you know, late spring and over the summer and will come out in the fall. We could bring them in and set them up and, you know, set up movie nights for the players if they wanted to watch, you know, Black Widow or something like that, which, you know, again, those are pretty cool, you know, things that they'll do. But I think if you come in, I think it's probably more of the veteran guys, especially those who have a real chance at winning a championship. I'm going to guess those guys are more of the mindset of, yo, hey, I'm coming in. And I've talked to some players who said, it's a business trip. I feel like we can win a championship. I'm going to go there, get my work in, do what I got to do, and try to win a championship and come home, you know, and get a ring at some point. And that's, I think that's important to, you know, keep that in mind with guys. And my guess is, you know, because in the end, money always wins out in these things, and there are, you know, a significant amount of money, you know, somewhere close to $1 billion on the table here for the league as a whole. These players will, you know, eventually be like, all right, let's get this done. Let's figure it out. How do we get back and get this, you know, going?
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think from a Miami fan perspective, as most of my listeners are, that, you know, that team is fully engaged. I think because of the flexibility regarding practice facilities in Florida, Miami has been probably one of the teams that has been most ready to roll as quickly as possible. We're getting confirmation that everybody on that team is on board. And obviously because of their overall approach to fitness and conditioning, they're probably going in there as hardworking as possible, just making sure that they understand that this is, as you've said, a business trip, and they're ready to move forward and win as much as they possibly can. So I wonder if it's kind of like the teams on the outside a little bit, maybe those teams that aren't realistic title contenders or guys like that, that maybe, especially on the younger end, those guys are, I could imagine, being a little frustrated. 22, 23 years old, they're used to having a lot of autonomy with their flex, you know, with their social life and things of that sort. And now all of a sudden that's going to change pretty drastically there. So what you described there, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I think you're absolutely right on that. I think, you know, and I go back to something that you said at the beginning though, is like, well, fine, then you go and you're out of there in like, you know, a month. You know, you're not going to be there for the full deal. You know, if you're the Suns and the Wizards, and I'm not saying that those are the guys who are complaining, but if they were, you're probably not, your stay's not going to be very long. You're going to do your thing, and then you're out of there and you're off to, you know, whatever it is you want to do. And it is funny, you know, I kind of just, as I've been doing the circuit here in this, it slipped my mind that this was a Heat podcast momentarily, but, you know, thinking about the Heat, they are one of the teams I've talked to players that they feel, you know, we have a chance at this. You know, now there's no home court advantage, you know, so we don't have to go play road games and we don't have to, you know, fight our way through Milwaukee or, you know, any of those places. And they're one of the teams that feels like, hey, if things break right for us and we play well, you know, maybe we could be the team that's there at the end. And, you know, and there's seven or eight teams that feel that way. So I think, you know, that's going to be what ultimately makes this, you know, those teams will be committed. They'll be there. They'll be, you know, ready to go, and they'll be the ones who, you know, ultimately make this pretty good basketball in the end, because they do have that belief that they can win.
Absolutely. As a quick aside, where are you on the asterisk conversation? Because I have been long maintaining that if the season were to resume, that you would have to put an asterisk next to it, because there's just so irregular. The conditions about this season have been so atypical that you'd have to kind of just note it as differently. Not to say that you're not a legitimate champion or any of that kind of conversation. I've never really felt that way. I just think that you have to kind of just note that this is a very unusual season because of the long hiatus, because of the conditions of having to restart the season, things of that sort. Where do you stand on it? I'm curious.
Yeah, so I'm with you on the noted. I think it's always kind of a footnote on there. I think, you know, versus an asterisk, but there's always, you know, going to be some kind of footnote, much like there is on the lockout seasons where it's, yeah, you know, that was that weird lockout season where the Knicks made the finals or it was that weird lockout season, but nobody ever discounts and says, well, you know, that Spurs title didn't really count because, you know, that was a weird season where they only played 50 games. Like then no, I've never heard anybody say that. And I think in this case, it's fair to note it and be like, yeah, remember that weird, you know, 2020 season, you know, when we're, you know, in, you know, 40 years from now and, you know, we're all sitting around. Remember that when they stopped for, you know, months in the middle and then they came back. But I think all the teams are in the same boat, here. I think they're all coming in, you know, in the same way and in those kind of things. And I think that, you know, if anything, I think in some ways, whoever wins this is going to have earned it. In some ways even more, because they're going to have come in one in really adverse situation, you know, that everybody else was in the same spot. And I think that's something, you know, that is going to be really important to, you know, kind of keep in mind here. And then, you know, I fully reserve the right that if we get to the NBA finals and one of the teams all of a sudden, four of their, you know, starters got, you know, coronavirus, well, then that does certainly change things. And then you got to start to really look at it and say, all right, this is a little bit of a different situation here, but as long as everybody stays healthy and they just kind of play it out, I think whoever wins is a, you know, worthy champion.
Without a doubt. We'll get into that a little bit more. And obviously you have forgotten that this is a Heat podcast by mentioning the time that the Knicks went to the 99 finals.
Oh my gosh, they were the eighth seed
that knocked off the Miami Heat, who were the first seed in the Eastern Conference.
Houston rolled that one in.
All right. That's okay. Now you're twisting the knife a little bit. No need to get into that. All right. We'll talk a little bit more about the proposed plan to resume the season in the Disney World campus. You're listening to Locked On Heat. All right, Keith. I've been telling my listeners for a few weeks now about Built Bar. You were telling me beforehand that you have not tried this project. Is that correct?
I have not, but I'm interested to learn about it.
Well, it is a fantastic bar that a lot of everybody around the network raves about it. They have 16 flavors, but they're adding flavors all the time. You can build your own box of flavors. And I know if you've ever tried a protein bar, a lot of the time you don't like the taste. It kind of gets a little chalky, but this is a different one. It's like almost like a candy bar. They're all covered in chocolate. They've all got the nutrients that you're looking for, and it's just so easy, especially in today's world. I've been telling my listeners, just grab a bar and go, and you've got the nutrients you need for the rest of the day, at least tide you over for a few hours in between meals, and that's just so convenient, especially now. I can just imagine us being in Orlando at this bubble covering games, and in between meals with everything that's going on, with five different games being played out over the course of a day, you just want to grab something quick and easy, and that's where Built Bar comes in. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and enter the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 10% off your first order of Built Bar protein bars. Believe me, you won't regret it. They're just perfect go-to snack if you're ever hungry and need something to tide you over between meals. Built Bar is the way to go. So go to BuiltBar.com, enter the promo code LOCKEDON to get your discounted box today. I'm here with Keith Smith. We're talking a little bit more about the proposed bubble site for the NBA season restarting in just a couple of weeks now. I mean, it feels like we just started hearing rumors about this. You wrote this piece for Yahoo Sports a couple months ago, and now all of a sudden we're right on the cusp there. You know, I was kind of hoping that we could get into a little bit more about what you were talking about towards the end there, about how difficult it'll be for players, the mental aspect of it, because I feel like that's important to kind of take into consideration. Where do you, like, obviously you grew up a fan of the Celtics. You're a lot, you're unbiased as media now, but what is your thought process regarding that Celtics team and whether or not, they've got a couple of young starters in Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum there that are the fulcrums of that team. Do you think they have the kind of mental toughness to be able to handle the conditions of playing in the bubble?
Yeah, let me give you a kind of a quick story first. It was funny. I was asking some scouts and coaches, who's going to do well as they come back? And I had one guy tell me, young teams, right? They're going to be able to hit the ground running. They're not going to take, 2 weeks to 4 weeks to really, get up into basketball shape and all that. Those are the teams to watch. And then on the flip side, I had a coach say, veteran teams, because the young teams, they're not going to know how to deal with this. They need home crowds to lift them and all those kind of things. So it's just kind of funny how, two people come from two completely different opposite ends of the spectrum on it. But as far as the Celtics go, I think they're going to be okay. I think they've got, a pretty good mix of veterans on the team. And clearly, like you said, they've got the two young, burgeoning stars there in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown that are leading the way. I think the break, hopefully helped them get healthy, because Jaylen Brown was dealing with a ton of leg and ankle injuries, leading up to the pause. And then, Kemba Walker was in and out of the lineup with knee soreness, which sounded like it was something that was going to be, have to be managed for the remainder of the regular season and maybe into the playoffs. And then Gordon Hayward, he's, just continuing to deal with soreness in that foot ankle from when he broke his leg, a couple years back. So I think, the pause helps them from those guys are able to get off their feet for a while. They're back in the gym now and they all look pretty good. It's hard to tell from, a couple, tweeted out shooting videos, which nobody ever misses a jump shot in those videos ever. So that's, that's just kind of a, thing there. But yeah, I mean, they look pretty good physically. So I think they'll be okay here. I do wonder though that, as a team that does trend a little younger, and then they've got a guy like Marcus Smart, who's kind of a mid-career guy, but, clearly feeds off the crowd quite a bit. Is that going to impact them? I'm curious to see what that ultimately looks like.
All right. That sounds pretty comprehensive. I know a lot of Heat fans. I mean, I think I'm one of, at least from my perspective, I'm mostly concerned about the Celtics because I feel they've given Miami a lot of trouble. The pick and roll combination with Kemba Walker is pretty dangerous. And he's just such a good pull up shooter from long range that I mean, just a huge concern for Miami. And I can imagine them probably being a tough challenger for the Heat there. So we'll probably get into that a little bit more in the next segment, but I'm going to take a step back and I kind of was hoping if you wouldn't mind just going over the details of what the proposed site would look like. Just the whole aspect of traveling to the ESPN Wide World of Sports, where players would be staying and things of that sort. And I know a lot of that has not been finalized yet, but at least just kind of going over the details that you are, you know, again, intimately familiar with, where and the whole Disney World complex would players be reportedly staying at?
Yeah, so it sounds like the primary hotel, which is going to be like the hub hotel for the NBA, is going to be Disney's Coronado Springs Resort, which that is Disney's primary convention hotel. It's got 220 square feet of convention space attached to it. They just opened it within the last year. They opened the Grandestino Tower, which is this beautiful high-end luxury tower because they're trying to attract high-end convention business. Disney really wants, when you think East Coast and conventions, you think Walt Disney World, and you're going to go and stay there and you let them handle everything for you with your convention that you bring to town. So that's what they're really pushing for. And in order to do that, they needed to upgrade a little. So they built that new tower. And in the course of that, they went through and upgraded all the rest of the resort as well, which is about, roughly 1700-ish rooms or so. All total is over 2000 rooms on that property. So I think that's going to be the primary hotel. At one point, it looked like it might be the only hotel. Now it sounds like there might be, another couple resorts involved. There is a Four Seasons on Walt Disney World property, which is one of the favorite hotels of NBA teams as they travel. So we'll see, if they get involved or not, or if there's another Disney hotel. But those are the hotels. The idea is really ones that are kind of isolated. They're away from things. They're going to be easier to keep people out of, which Disney, if you've never been to a Walt Disney World resort, Disney has their own security at the front and at, every possible entrance and exit point to the property there. And then Wide World Sports Complex, I know we talked about it a little bit. That's on the extreme south end of the property, not really close to the theme parks. There's three indoor venues. Sounds like they're gonna primarily use two as game courts. Maybe the third will have a game court, but what I was hearing, the initial plan was the HP Fieldhouse, which hosts the Advocare Invitation, which is a Division I college basketball tournament every year. That'll be one of the game courts.
That's then where the junior NBA tournament is held, by the way.
Yeah, that's like their kind of primary gym facility. Right. And if people maybe have some familiarity, it used to be called the Milk House. That was what it used to be called. Then they have another building there, which is fairly new, called the Arena, which the Arena was built for cheer and dance competitions, was what it was initially built for. But they can put as many as five or six courts in there, or they could set up three, full courts, or they can set up one really arena style court in there really nicely and fit that. So I think those are going to be the primary game courts. Then the Visa Center, which is, kind of this big, massive, wide open, multi-purpose spot. I think that is going to be set up to be likely the practice facility where they'll set up multiple courts in there with privacy partitions and the like for teams to practice. That's at least what the plan is. And I'm glad you said it because this is all ever evolving. So we'll ultimately see what this looks like because I've even heard, they may, haul a handful of hoops and floors over to Coronado Springs and set up a court in there for them if the players wanted to have an on-site at the hotel practice facility. So we'll see what that looks like, but that's kind of what it sounds like it'll be, and it'll be NBA only. As I've been jokingly saying as I've been making the rounds is no one's going to stumble in upon an NBA game, see, LeBron and Giannis going head-to-head and say, I was just looking for Space Mountain. Like, that's not going to happen.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that there are shower facilities at the HP Center. Is that correct?
There are shower facilities there, but they will not use them. That was part of this whole thing is the player. It's gonna be weird. It's gonna be like when you probably played high school ball, or youth ball. You showed up. You're a lot of times you're already in your uniform, and you went out. You played your game, and then you went back, and you maybe changed clothes, and then that was it. And you're back on the bus and back to the hotel. So there's gonna be no showering or anything like that. That's just one less thing they've got to clean and any of that stuff in the facility.
And that's fascinating because, I mean, for a lot of the listeners that might not be aware and don't get the opportunity to cover games the way we do, like the pregame ritual is so important to players.
Yep.
Yeah. And yeah, like you said, different. I mean, every player has a different routine, but I mean, almost invariably you will have some kind of routine, whether it's the same kind of meal, the same kind of music, it's, you know, the time it takes for you to get from the locker rooms to the court when you go out there pregame, and any kind of disruption kind of throws you off a little bit. So I wonder if these players are going to have the kind of flexibility to be able to say, you know what, these are such different conditions, I can't adhere to the same schedule, the same routine I normally do, and whether or not it will throw them off at some point. Because that's fascinating to think of the, of them kind of being shuttled en masse from whatever hotel they wind up staying at, dropped off at the location there, and having to go through a very different style of pregame warm-up and things of that sort is going to be a unique aspect of this that kind of gets overlooked, I think.
Yeah, it really does. I think about a guy who played for both teams we cover, Ray Allen, who, you know, famously has a very rigid, you know, this is my game day routine and this is what I do down to the minute, you know, and, this is when I shoot, this is where I shoot from, you know, all those things. I think about, you know, somebody like him, like them being like, yeah, so you can't do that, you know, and you can't do it, you know, when it's the, you know, most important games of the season. I just imagine, you know, what that would be like. I can't even, you know, fathom, you know, how that would work, where it's, what do you mean? You know, and there was all these talks of, you know, maybe part of the reason why you put these courts in at the hotel is that's where they do shoot around, pregame. You know, you do shoot around there. So you're not having to travel down to the arena, which we both know, right? A lot of these teams, they do, I think people have this sense of, game day is they come in, they do shoot around in the morning in the arena that they're playing in. And sometimes it's at a high school. Sometimes it's at a private gym, you know, in the area and those kind of things. It's not all, you know, sometimes it is at the arena. That's just kind of dependent on where they were the night before and what the team does and those kind of things. So yeah, it's just going to be different. It's going to be curious to see how some of those players, you know, adapt to, you know, a very, very different environment from what they're used to.
And as far as setting up the theoretical practice facility, would that be like in a ballroom at Coronado Springs or like a space outside? Because I mean, even with weather conditions being what they are in July, August, and September, I can't imagine any kind of outdoor access for players. Yeah.
No, it's going to be in one of the big ballrooms there. It's, you know, it was funny. So I worked at Coronado Springs when they opened the second half of the convention center, which made it, you know, just that much bigger. And when they did that, they brought in, the very first thing that they had there was this company that makes some helicopters. And one of the things that they brought in was they brought in a Blackhawk helicopter on the back of a semi truck and they parked it, right? They parked like this trailer right in the middle of the convention center because that was kind of the showpiece item. If you looked at it from far enough away, you would have thought you were looking at like a toy, like on the back of like a matchbox truck or something. You'd be like, oh, that's cute. But then you realize, wait a minute, that's like a real helicopter as you get closer, to just give a sense of just how massive these ballrooms are when they open them all the way up.
So do you think that players should have family members there? I mean, obviously there are concerns about whether or not there's going to be the extra risk of contamination and exposure to the coronavirus. But I feel like as a parent of a child, like you and I both are, you know, you'd want your family there for certain, you know, for certain instances. I can imagine why there's a need for players to establish that as something that they would want. But at the same time, do you think that's a risk worth taking for the players in the NBA?
I think if they do it the way they're talking about, when the bubble really shrinks down and you're maybe down to the conference finals or maybe the semifinals, you know, and you've only got half the teams still there, or, you know, or then there's only four teams still around, I think then, you know, it's fine because you're not introducing, you know, all that many more people back in. I think that would make, you know, a lot of sense there. It's when you're, you know, outside of that range, when it's still, you know, 22 teams, that part, you know, that just starts to become too big. Then it's not, now you're not managing a bubble, you're managing a small town, you know, worth of people. And that starts to become a bit of a challenge. You gotta really, you know, think through, you know, what does that look like? So what I would say is I'm good with it, because one thing that was pointed out to me by a front office person was part of the reason we want the families there is this is like the pinnacle. Like, you're winning a championship and you want to be able to celebrate that with the people who helped you get there. And to, you know, imagine doing that without any family present just really made them feel, you know, uneasy. And they got it at that point of, you know, want to do that. Now, I'll tell you a quick funny story. I had a guy back back when this was all being talked about as, the players are going to be okay with being away from their family. I had a player who told me, man, I've just spent 3 months with my, at that time it was two, but I've spent 2 months with my family, just us, doing this. Like, I'm ready for a break. I'm ready to go back to work. So I kind of get that side of it too, is where, I've been being, dad and teacher and trying to work and those kind of things. I get it. It wouldn't be bad to, necessarily run off to go to work. But what stands out as weird to me is, can you imagine taking kids of, anything, beyond maybe teenagers, and I don't even know if it works with them, to Walt Disney World and then saying, yeah, but we can't go to any of the parks. We just got to hang out here while dad plays basketball like that. I don't know. That almost seems like cruel and unusual punishment to a child.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem like it would be very difficult to try and explain to kids of that age that, you're right there within striking distance. This is the happiest place on earth, the place that every kid dreams of going to, and you can't actually go to it. I think there would be a pretty high level of resentment between kids and parents
right?
at that point. Yeah.
I would be like, I will come and root you on to win a championship if right after it's over, you rent a hotel room and you take me to Magic Kingdom. Then that's the only way I'm doing it. That's where I put my foot down as a kid.
That's a good way of selling it. Yeah. I think you say, right? Look, you hang tight for a month or two and then afterwards we'll spend a week here. Don't worry about it. All right. We'll talk a little bit more about the proposed plan to start the season in just a few moments. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. I'm here with Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports, talking about the proposed plan to restart this season at Disney World Complex, the bubble site, everything else that's involved. And one of the aspects that I think, especially today, has gotten a lot of attention is the possibility of media being, quote unquote, sequestered and trapped at the Disney World Complex. What's your take? And I'm pretty sure I know exactly how you feel about this, because it's probably pretty similar to how I feel about it. But what's your take on whether or not people should be, or whether or not the NBA will allow media present there to cover games?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a very small amount. From what I understand, it's going to be very cost prohibitive for most places to send someone. Think about the realities of that. It's a hotel room at Disney World for roughly three and a half months. And then you are also, all your food is covered while you're there. Like that's pricey, and I just don't know that many outlets are going to be able to do that. And it's, from my side, I've already had that conversation with my wife before we knew any of the realities of it. And I said, hey, I would go. And she's like, I think she's tired of me being home anyway. I think she's ready for me to go back to work. So, I would go. But, then it sounds like there's going to be a secondary tier where, that first tier, you're in the bubble, you're living in there, you're with the teams and the players, you get full access to the coaches, players, everybody, kind of like the old world was. Then the secondary tier sounds like it's going to be more go and cover games. And then you leave. But all your player and coach access is going to be done through what I assume will be like Zoom calls and the like. And that's how the beat writers will do their job. And at that point, I kind of start to look at it and say, well, if I can just do the same thing from the couch as far as seeing the game, maybe is that the way I want to go versus, going on site. And, and I know that they're working on some things, that the Pro Basketball Writers Association is working with the NBA to try to make it valuable and, good coverage and all that for the fans and the like. But yeah, I don't know. I think you have to have media there to do some of it, because otherwise it starts to become, all right, I'm just, watching this, and people always, we hear it all the time, as much as they'll yell at us about, you shouldn't be in the locker rooms. But then it's like, but what's it really like? That's where I'm like, well, if you want to know what it's really like, we got to kind of be there to pull that off.
If you had the opportunity, and right now it's not a realistic option, but if you had the opportunity to be there for 3.5 months, would you do it? I mean, because that's a question I pose myself. I don't think I could, to be honest with you. I'd want to have the flexibility to go and leave. I mean, I could take a couple weeks there, but a 3.5 month period of staying there might be a little bit too much for anybody, as far as just being there separated from your family and things of that sort.
Yeah, I would like to say sitting here right now, in very much in need of a job, I would like to say yes. I think as it got closer, I would start to really like, wow. And just personal experience, when I go to summer league, I usually go for at least a week. I'm not one of those people who drops in for the opening weekend and then leaves. I'm out there for a week. And when I've been out there without my family, it starts to kind of suck to be without them. I start to feel like, man, I really, miss them. I wish they were here and, I want to get back, to home to see them and stuff. And, I can't imagine for you, you've got a much younger family than I do, and thankfully, with my daughter, we can jump on FaceTime and the like and those kind of things, which, that's made the world smaller, thankfully, and do that. So I would like to say, sure, yeah, I'll go for 3.5 months, but I would definitely, have some thoughts, especially as it got closer to time to, pack up and, travel all the way, 20 minutes from my house to, to property to stay. That part's also weird of like, wow, my house is like right there. Like, it would probably be tempting too to be like, what if I could sneak out of here real quick? But I know that's not going to be a possibility because they're going to have the place pretty well locked down.
Now, is that a legitimate? I've never really felt that aspect of it, whether I visited Disney World or whether I covered games at the Wide World of Sports, but how will the security work? I mean, are you going to have like armed guards? What's going to happen if a player X tries to leave there? What do you envision? I don't think we had any kind of details about that because they want to have players, locked in and make sure that they don't take that risk. But I mean, invariably it's going to happen. I imagine one player is going to want to leave. We'll find out about this afterwards, or then maybe they'll try and cover it up, or maybe somebody will break the news. Maybe you'll break the news, but how do you see security being a factor here for this tournament?
Yeah, so I can only tell you from the Disney side, with all these things, Disney is kind of deferring to, we're going to do whatever the NBA tells us to do. And the approach has been, no one's going to be locked in. If you want to leave, you can leave, but then it's going to be when you come back, there's, I've heard ranges from anywhere from, 8 to 14 days, you're going to have to quarantine if you leave. You'll go, and Disney can monitor that pretty easy because you're going to have to come and go out of the, front gate of the hotel. That's, going to be the only way that's going to be able to be pulled off. So they'll know, pretty easily when you're coming back in or, you've left or whatever. And that's, something that I would imagine they'll work with the league on, and they'll have extra security. They'll have, Disney security. I wouldn't be surprised if they also, involve Orange and Osceola County Sheriffs, because those are the two responding groups to Disney property, as they straddle the two counties, which I've learned a lot about. People don't, that confuses people because they don't understand, that Disney's kind of its own thing in Orange County. And, but then we work in the state of Florida more on counties than we do, anything else, at that level and those kind of things.
Always liken it to like reservations in the United States, that they're own sovereign nation, or like the Vatican City in the middle of. It's like, that's its own country with its own government and everything else. Disney is a separate entity.
Yeah, it's all whole own deal. They actually, they reside in the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which is a Disney entity, which was, just to give a little Disney lesson for people, if people care to hear it, it was, when Walt built Disneyland, very quickly thereafter, all these outside groups bought up all the land all around Disneyland. And then they started building these high rise hotels, which could see into the park. And he hated that. So his whole thing was, when we build this park in Florida, we're going to buy so much land that nobody can, see in. And then part of that was, the state of Florida needs to agree with us to allow us to build our own, entity, which will run things here. And that's who will, approve the height of buildings and the, things as far as the building codes and all the like there. Now, it's funny because it sounds like, that sounds shady. Like they're trying to build stuff, on the sly here and real shoddy, but they're actually, stricter building codes in a lot of cases than what they are in other parts of the state. But that was a big chunk of why, he wanted to set it up. And then going back to the sports complex, I assume that roadway, like we're talking, there's a pretty deep road to get down in to the sports complex. I'm assuming just off the main road enough where you won't back up into regular traffic. You'll have gates there where you're going to have to go through probably several levels and show credentials and ID and all that other stuff. Probably that may be right there where they take temperature checks and the like, because they're not just going to let you go wandering right in there, even if you've got the credentials, without being checked. So I think that will all happen there. And again, I'd probably put very heavy security and maybe even police presence all the way down there as well.
So it's not like a group of your fans is going to be able to sneak on there surreptitiously and get into the facility or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, you know, people know, I mean, what's, there's that guy who's got like a 20-year streak of sneaking into the Super Bowl or whatever it is, and he hasn't been caught. So, you know, maybe somebody will pull off some, you know, kind of crazy nonsense, or, you know, parachute in and, you know, land on the soccer fields and you'll go running into the facility or something. But it won't be, it's going to take a pretty monumental effort to get in anywhere that the NBA is going to be in, you know, quite frankly, the MLS, since they've announced that they're going to be on property as well.
Are the parks going to be open? I know they're slowly trickling as far as which parks open at what time, but by the time the season resumes, will the parks all be open?
Yep, they will be open. So two are going to open on July 11th, and then the other two theme parks are going to open on July 15th. So they're going to do a little bit of a staggered opening. Disney has really been taking their time. Universal Studios, which is, you know, just down the road, closer to downtown Orlando, opened up last week. And Disney said, you know, we're going to take a little while longer. Part of that is, you know, it's bigger. They've got more stuff that they've got to cover through. But a big chunk of that is retraining the cast and, you know, making sure they're taking safety precautions for the cast members, which that's Disney lingo for employee after 20 years there. I'm never going to lose that. Right. And then, you know, what is it like for the guests as well? What are all the protocols? Because there's, you know, going to be things like, all right, well, you know, to ride rides, you're going to use the Disney app to pick, you know, I'm going to go ride Space Mountain at 11. Then I'm going to go ride Big Thunder Mountain at, you know, noon, and those will be your times versus going and standing in line for hours. You're going to be given a time, and then you show back up, and that's how they're going to, you know, help do the social distancing and cleaning the ride vehicles in between and the like. So it's a big undertaking. So Disney's really taking their time to develop all these things for both the cast and the guests to make sure it's as safe of an experience as everybody. So the parks will be open, but from what I've been told, again, not from Disney's side, Disney is saying, hey, if it's safe, it's safe. If the NBA wants to come, we're happy to have you. But the NBA has basically said, nope, not happening. You're not going anywhere near those theme parks, which makes sense for, you know, all kinds of reasons.
Are the parks restricting how many people will be in attendance?
They are, yeah. So normally in the summertime, like if you're talking mid-July at the park at Magic Kingdom, that's the peak, right? The peak month. Yeah, July, August, early August, the actual two peak weeks, and, you know, Disney would hate for me to say this, but it doesn't matter because enough people come anyway, are Christmas. The 2 weeks are on Christmas time.
Right.
It's a nightmare. Don't ever go then. That's the, like, worst time to go. Go, if you can, pull your kids out of school, go a couple weeks before. You get all the Christmas experience without all the madness of, you know, a million people there. But yeah, Magic Kingdom in July, they'll hit, you know, 60,000-70,000 guests in the Magic Kingdom alone. Each day is, you know, that'll kind of be the peak attendance. That's when you'll see, you know, wait times for rides be, you know, 2-3 hours sometimes and the like. So it sounds like they're going to do, you know, far less. You know, could be quarter attendance to start off with, and then maybe up to as much as a half, but they're really going to limit the amount of people who are in the parks pretty severely because, again, the whole idea is to try and, you know, give a great experience for all those who do come.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. It sounds. I mean, the more I think about it, I've been a long proponent of just canceling the season outright. And, you know, maybe for my listeners, you know, that are probably champing at the bit for basketball to be played again, it's like nobody is more emotionally and financially invested in the season resuming than me. I mean, this is how we do what we can do to cover the season regularly. I want to see basketball, but just like the complexity of this plan of everything that's involved seems almost nightmarish. And, you know, maybe it works out well. Who knows, maybe in mid-October after the finals are finished and the season's gone on and, you know, everything works out the way they expect it to or they hope it does, maybe we can look back and say, well, maybe I was just being a little bit pessimistic. But at this time, it just seems like more and more people are starting to see how many details go into finalizing this. And, you know, they've had months, as you said, they've had months to work out these details. And still, here we are at the 11th hour and players are saying, wait a minute, I'm not so sure I want to do this anymore. It's like you've already agreed to this. You know, your players association's already agreed to this. And it's really, really tough to envision how this is going to work out. I'm excited about it. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm excited, you know, and a big chunk of that is, as you were kind of alluding to, is purely selfish. I would like to get back to work and, you know, make money in my newly chosen profession after I left Disney, you know, 3 weeks before the season shut down to cover the NBA, because my timing is nothing if not impeccable. But, you know, I wanted to get back for that reason, but also, you know, I really miss it. I love basketball so much. I love the NBA. I just, you know, want to see it play, but there's a part of me that says, man, if they can pull this off, this is an all-timer by, you know, all parties involved here, because there's so much to figure out with this. You know, I know what the people just on the Disney side are going through, which is just, you know, how do we get the hotels ready? You know, things like that they're already going through is, all right, well, we're not used to having, you know, 107-foot guests at the same time. You know, do we need to get in, you know, special beds and those kind of things? And can we do that in a month period? You know, and all the things that go into that, though, those are, you know, big questions logistically on the Disney side. There are, you know, then the NBA's got to figure out, you know, all of their stuff, and we're seeing, you know, it feels like every day there's, you know, 7 or 8 new questions that come out. And talking with someone with the league, just something is, it would seemingly be as simple as putting together the schedule. They're like, every time we, you know, look at something, somebody looks and says, ah, that's not going to work, we got to change this, and then that dominoes 6 other things. And then it's like, all right, well, not completely tear it up and start back over, but all right, we got to relook at this. So it is such a, you know, undertaking. My wife and I were joking about it. When we travel, you know, to a road soccer game with our daughter, you know, all of our little checklists. Now imagine that with, you know, 22 teams coming for, you know, 3.5 months versus, you know, maybe a, you know, for us, it's so far been about a 3 to 3.5 hour max car ride. You know, well, what does that look like? You know, it's just so many things. I, you know, it kind of starts to make my head hurt just to even think through all those details.
All right. I'm putting you on the spot. Where do we wind up the season? I mean, obviously it goes out as planned. Everything finalizes. Who winds up being crowned the NBA champion at this point in time? Who do you see that?
Yeah, I picked Bucks versus Clippers before the season. I'm not going to move off that. I think the very best teams, you could play the games on the moon and that they would still win. And, you know, those teams, you know, being healthy. So I'm going to give it to the Bucks. I'm going to respect their body of work. I think Giannis, the fact that he had that little knee injury and then he's been able to get all this time off, and that team is just, you know, playing so well. I'm going to give it to them. And I think that they will win, but, you know, we could go on for another 2.5 hours talking about, you know, 6 or 7 other teams that I would be like, yeah, I could see them too. But I think, you know, Bucks over Clippers is ultimately what it'll be.
All right. That's an interesting perspective. I think you might be right. Although I do believe that Miami matches up well with Milwaukee. They've just regular season success, which really doesn't count for much, but I like their personnel as assembled to done. I actually think, again, that Toronto and Boston are worse matchups for Miami than Milwaukee, and maybe I'm crazy, but I've been pretty consistent about that. So I'm curious to see how it all plays out, and soon enough, that'll be an option. Everything's working out the way we expect it to. We'll have basketball in just a few weeks. Keith, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, and I hope you and your family continue to stay safe and that you'll be hired full-time as you deserve so that you can be there in the bubble for as long as possible covering these games.
Man, I thank you so much. I appreciate those kind words. Thanks for having me on the show. Hope you and your family stay safe as well.
Absolutely. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah!